Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Welcome to Red Storm Chasers. I'm Vincent, here with Craig and Nick. On this episode, we'll look back at the Bahamas trip and the Harvard victory. We'll look ahead to the Kansas State and Bryant matchups. Guys, good to be on with you. Unfortunately, we've got to start with some very terribly sad news for the St. John's family. As everyone is now aware, we've lost the great Lou Carnesecca over the past week.
Yeah, a very sad day in St. John's history today with him passing.
He was St. John's. He really embodied St. John's. Yeah. I mean, he really brought us to the heights that we've gotten to, and we've never really matched that success that Lou had. And he's really the patron saint of St. John's, as they say. You know, always sitting at the games watching, even when he wasn't coaching anymore. And the most important figure in St. John's, really, over the last 50 years.
There's a reason we named the court and the arena after him.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now we got to name the university after him.
Lou Carnesecca University. Might as well be, to be completely honest. It has been nice, I will say, to see the recognition that he's gotten. Obviously for a sad reason, but it is nice to see the sports world recognize that he was the legend that he was. And to see, not people who you may not think of, but, places you may not think of him receiving that recognition, certainly getting that, people from the NBA, stuff like that, where, he obviously didn't have a long NBA career, but still the basketball world paid respects, which is well-deserved. St. John's going to pay some respect as well. Sorry,
he made a lot of impact on a lot of different players. And those St. John's teams that he coached had a lot of NBA guys. Looking through their rosters, it wasn't just a few guys. It wasn't just the team you think of and the players you think of. There were lots of guys who made it to the NBA, and Lou brought them there. And so he made a huge impact across the game. And, it was, like you said, it was nice to see the tributes across the sporting world.
Certainly. And St. John's is going to do a lot of honoring this weekend for men's and women's. They're both, actually, for the rest of the season, they're going to be wearing a Lou patch, which will be great to see. They'll also be wearing 526 shooting shirts, which you'll see this coming Saturday as the men's and women both teams play. They're also going to unveil a commemorative decal on the court. I'll be interested to see what that is. Obviously, his name's already there.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
So maybe it'll just be his picture or something, I assume. I believe they're probably going to have his seats, I would assume, empty. In his honor,
that'll be nice.
Roped off. I know that they mentioned that they're going to be empty. I assume there'll be some kind of. There'll certainly be a tribute video that most people have seen by now.
I think there has been one. Yeah, that's been circulating.
I don't know if that's the one they're going to air, but they're going to air one before the men's and women's games.
I'm sure they'll probably do a special one for. Hope they'll do a special one.
Yeah, I don't know if it's different from the one that they've released already or not. But they're also, I thought this was pretty cool. They're going to do a digital billboard on the Long Island Expressway, the Whitestone Expressway, and the New Jersey Turnpike. Wow. So kind of a cool way to honor him, I thought.
That is cool.
A little different. Yeah. Obviously covering the entire New York, New Jersey area.
He's a New York guy, so it makes sense. He's all over the city.
He was a pillar of St. John's basketball and of the university, and it is very sad to see him go. We want to pay him tribute, and our thoughts are obviously with his family at this time.
Hopefully we go to at least a Final Four this season for him.
That'd be a good way to pay tribute.
That would be nice.
Getting back to the Final Four for the first time, that would be great. From your lips to God's ears. Anyway, let's get into the team that Lou loves. We'll talk about St. John's basketball. Start with our starting five. Starting five, in honor of Feast Week, perhaps probably the third best week, I would say, in college basketball.
Yeah. Close second. Close to second.
The starting five best Feast Week tournaments. Obviously, we played in one. There's a ton throughout the entire week, but that's going to be our starting five for the day. Nick, you get the honors. Give us your starting five Feast Week tournaments.
Well, you're so generous. Let me go first. So I'm gonna pick a bunch of fastballs because it's Feast Week. That's awesome.
All right.
I'm gonna go for Battle of Atlantis, mainly good because one. I went to that one, and it's also very good teams. I usually get there.
Great location.
Maui Invitational because that's been like.
That's the best one. So yeah.
Yeah, that's like the preeminent one every single year.
That's definitely the GOAT.
I mean, it's
I'm gonna go. I'm going to go with the Bahamar one because I just went good there one. Too. And also tons of great great teams that usually go there. My fourth one is going to be the ESPN Invitational that they do down in Disney. When I was there, we didn't do it for Feast Week. We went down there for a tournament, and being at the World Wildlife Sports is really cool. So I will say that too. And the fifth and final, a little blast from the past. I'm going to go with the Great Alaskan Shootout.
Wow. R.I.P. It doesn't exist anymore.
It came back in 2022. They had four teams.
I know, but it's gone now.
Oh, they canceled it again?
R.I.P.
Short-lived the second stint.
It deserves to be on the list. It deserves to be on the list.
Because I will never forget when we played there, when D'Angelo Harrison was there, and I was like, wow, are we playing in Alaska? I was in like high school, middle school, or something like that. And I was like, Alaska?
Great Alaska Shootout. It was a great event. I worked that event for my job a few times. It was an interesting one. It used to happen when it was all daytime in Alaska at the time, yeah, at this time of year. So
I think that's probably why a lot of mine are on my list too, because they're the ones that are late night. And then we get to see the game. We're late night people.
Craig, what is your starting five of Feast Week tournaments?
My starting five, like I said, Maui Invitational has to be the first one. It's really the best, it's the best teams, best venue. We actually been to Maui. We checked out the Lahaina Civic Center as we drove by it. So that was pretty cool. Number two, I agree with Nick Balfour, Atlantis. They really they get a great tournament. It's really cool. They get really good teams. The Bahamar one has some good, I would put on my list as well. Nick, the Great Alaska Shootout I had is my last five wild card, which is, when you said, I was like, oh man, that was my wild card.
That's
one.
So funny.
Because that was one of the original ones when no one was doing these Feast Week tournaments. That was the Great Alaska Shootout and the Maui Invitational. Those have been the pillars that started a lot of this. So I'm going to put that one as honorable mention, even though it's still not really in existence. But and the last one is the Players Era one in Las Vegas this year, which was
that one was really good.
And
that was a good one.
You get Kansas, right?
No. This one was the one that had $1 million of NIL money to the winning team. Two things I like to for first. I think that's innovative, and we're going to see how that plays going forward. If they're even allowed to do that, I don't know they're allowed, but it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. If that changes these tournaments going forward,
I think you can. It's a gray area.
We'll see. We're going to find out.
You certainly can for now.
You can for now.
There's no rules for now.
You can do anything.
But the other advantage for me personally, as a late night person, was those games literally had live basketball till 3 o'clock in the morning. So
yes, very
that
true.
Was really hit home well for me. So that's going to be my fifth.
All right, all good selections there. I did my starting five based 100% on location. Maui Invitational, though, absolutely the GOAT. That one always makes the list. Around. It's got to be on there. Bahamar as well. This year had great teams. Last year had great teams. It seems like a tournament that does really well. I think they benefit from geography. The Bahamas is very close. Same thing with Battle for Atlantis, which is on my list. Closer, they tend to get better teams. That's my three. My other two, a little different. Paradise Jam, which has taken a bit of a step back. It used to be a bigger tournament. Used to get some real good teams. Now they don't get as many.
That's St. Thomas.
That's in there. And then Cayman Island Classic, kind of a new one. Pretty decent teams this year. Boise State, Boston College went out there. So, I went mainly with the Caribbean games.
There you go.
But those are my top
five. Warm in the winter here.
Yeah, it got freezing cold. So I was like, where can be the warmest place that I can possibly imagine to go?
Can we also talk about one thing during Feast Week? The Greenbrier tournament in West Virginia. Behind the basket, because there's never at regular venues, right? They're all kind of
ballroom in Greenbrier, the golf course.
In Greenbrier, I was watching the game instead of doing work one day, and they literally had an armchair that you would have in your living room.
They just did.
Sitting behind the basket.
Not only that,
it was a ticketed seat.
The governor of West Virginia came and sat in that seat with his dog.
It's wild.
They had two or three or four of them, I thought, saw behind the thing.
That's really funny.
The Greenbrier is brand new. There's a brand new tournament this year. Greenbrier, weird place, by the way. Greenbrier has a nuclear bunker specifically made for Congress. So there is a room. There's two rooms for both the Senate and the House in Greenbrier inside the bunker. They could essentially go there in a nuclear disaster and continue to run the government. It's your fun fact of the day.
Fun fact of the day.
All right. What was not a fun fact of the day was the terrible, well, I mean, not terrible because it was a trip to the Bahamas, but the not very fun trip to the Bahamas that the St. John's Red Storm had over the week before Thanksgiving. It started with a heartbreaking 99-98 double overtime loss against the Baylor Bears. We had talked about that game being a big one for us, being a game where we thought we could make a statement. And to be honest, I think we may have. I think we put some people on notice that, hey, listen, we can play with these guys, obviously.
For sure.
We had every opportunity to win that game, and we couldn't put it away. It was, you know.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best games of the year, you'll see, just objectively.
Anytime you go to double overtime, and
a buzzer beater. That shouldn't have been. So I'll get that out of the way right now.
I was literally going to start with it. We need to start with the fact that the clock started late on the missed free throw.
Really? Not even like a half a second late.
Significantly
late enough that the shot wouldn't have counted, which I know sounds like crying after the fact, but one of the issues with Feast Week tournaments is that these places are typically venues where basketball is played once a year, which means that the clock operators tend to be people who don't do this all the time. So you see a lot of clock issues and mistakes like that. You also see referees who are starting their season and aren't in midseason form and aren't willing or at the point where they're commanding the game as much as they normally do. And I think we fell victim to that a bit in this game.
For sure.
And that's partly, not completely why, but partly why we ended up with the loss. Shot great, 54% from the field, 57% from free throw line is not great. The missed free throws were a problem.
That was our biggest problem in this entire game is our missed free throws because we shot the ball really well.
Unbelievably well.
Like above 50% from the field goal and from the three.
But 58% from three, yeah.
Which is phenomenal. We outshot them and they shot like
45%. They shot 51%. Well, yeah, 42% from the field, 51% from three.
Yeah, we outshot them except for the free throw line. Where it mattered the most. Especially when you can tell, at least like it seemed like coming down the very stretch, you know, probably even in the second half, late second half, but really in overtime too, there was times where it was like you could tell our guys were gassed. And like it's a double overtime game and it's understandable, but
it happened. It just seemed to be that we missed free throws at critical moments.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously we all know how well St. John's fans responded to Zuby, who missed the free throw, right, and wore some blame for it. He went from 6 from 12 from the line, which is, you know, not a great day.
And missed the two critical ones.
He missed the critical ones. But by the way, shout out to our fans because I've seen St. John's teams. We've all seen St. John's teams where they missed a free throw, and that guy is public enemy number one. Right. How many times have we seen that happen where it's for St. John's fans, they boo and they turn on a guy. To have the presence we had in the Bahamas was phenomenal. But to have that group of fans step up for a guy who you could tell needed it. Right. Like Zuby was hurting.
Yeah.
To have that moment, I think that says a lot about our fans and our team for this year. I think we all have bought in. We all believe that this is a team that's going to succeed and go far. So the Feast Week tournament is not the time to be turning on players who make mistakes. It's a time where, okay, you made a mistake. It's all right. We're still here for you. So that was an awesome moment.
Yeah, I think it definitely meant a lot to him. I mean, he said it did. And nobody wanted to make those free throws more than Zuby had.
Right, absolutely. I mean,
as much as we all wanted it and much as we all, like, he's the one who, you know what I mean? So I think I agree with you, you know, just coming back like that and just the support and, like, look, we want them all to win. We want them to do well. And this is the best way to do it, support them, right? I mean, like, they, you know, he wanted to hit the shots. It just didn't fall. It didn't work out. But guess what? He's an extremely important player for this team. And if we are going to be good, he is going to be a main cog in that.
And he led the team in scoring in that game, by the way.
He had a great game, by the way.
22 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks. I mean, it's a phenomenal day.
He did have a great day, but I will say this. He gets the ball with 45 seconds left, and he's under the basket, and there's 29 seconds left on the shot clock, and you're up 4. You're up 2 possessions. Even if you dunk the ball, you're up 6, still 2 possessions. You pull it out, they only have 1 shot clock left.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that's an early season issue.
It is.
And I think that's something we're going to over.
All that fun.
And in all honesty, it's the first season where Zuby's the guy, right? He's been the sub in guy for Joel last year. I think that's growing pains a bit, and we'll get there. We also got to talk about Aaron Scott. I mean, man, yeah. 6 for 8, 5 of 6 from 3, 20 points.
Clutch with a capital C.
Phenomenal.
Whenever we needed a bucket, he was the guy who went together.
I mean, there's no doubt he's our sixth man. It's not even remotely close.
Starter.
I mean, he's getting to the point where he's going to be a starter. But just another phenomenal game for him. So obviously, yeah, that disappointing loss to start the Bahamas trip. We came back with a vengeance, though.
Absolutely.
Came back.
Soul crushing.
100% soul crushing. But we did come back and we stomped out Virginia.
We needed that.
We needed it. That exactly. That, it's funny because that's a win that old St. John's doesn't get. Typically, we go into a spiral, 100%. Right? We lose the first game, we're double overtime. You're like, oh, we almost beat Bill. We'll blow out Virginia. Then they don't show up the next day. Yeah. And all of a sudden, that's a loss. And then you're reeling, not this team. 80-55, a dominant victory. There was at no point in this game where it was like, uh-oh, we're going to blow this one. They came out, despite the double overtime, 52% from the field, 41% from three, 60% from the free throw lines. Phenomenal. I mean, the perfect response to the double overtime crushing loss.
It really shows the resiliency of this team, which is a very important factor going forward. Look, the Baylor game, they're a great team. We played them to the wire. Probably should have won it, like we talked about. But then to have that response, that's going to matter going through the rest of the season. Because, you're going to get knocked down at certain times. Like, it just is the way it is. How you get back up is very important. And this team showed it has that resiliency.
Absolutely. Yeah, 10 people score in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. We spread the ball around a lot. We really were just in a groove the entire game. It was we did exactly what we had to do. From a defensive side, from an offensive side, there's really not anything to really complain about this.
Yeah, you couldn't be more happy with that performance.
No.
Unfortunately, we then took a bit of a step back. We added before the season. We added a game against Georgia in Atlantis. So obviously we're at the Bahamar Resort. That's where we had the tournament. Then the Atlantis resort is only about a half hour away on the same island. So he bussed over to there and played a game against Georgia, actually before the battle for Atlantis. We played on the court before anybody else. Before anybody else in that tournament. Georgia actually played Marquette the day before. We never practiced on this court. We obviously came over from the other resort. And we played a game where we looked absolutely terrible. We shot 31% from the field, 10% from three, 82% from the free throw line is not bad. That one we'll take. Zuby 12 of 13, by the way, that was his response.
Yeah.
But we, despite the fact that Georgia shot 49%, so you're looking at 18% swing in their favor in terms of field goal percentage. They shot 41% from three. We shot 10%. Okay, so, 29-point gap. We still should have won this game.
It's funny. I don't think I've ever seen anybody actually shoot 10%.
I mean, 10% is pathetic. I'm
viewing stats. Like, 10% is like, what is in the water? Like, that doesn't happen.
We were abysmal from three-point range.
We were. That's why I hesitated when you said we still should have won this game. I don't know that we should have won this game. I don't think we really played well enough to win the game. We were in position.
We lost by three points.
Yeah, but we shot 10% from the three-point line.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, look, they turned the ball over 24 times.
That's why we should have won this game.
Yeah, maybe. I think – I don't know if I should have. I think we had an opportunity to that we unfortunately did not.
I think the answer is really good teams win games where they look bad. And we were in a position to win this game because we're a good team. We didn't pull it off. We lost, obviously.
Yeah.
But, listen, it happens. I think, to tell you the truth, this is a recipe of bad scheduling for us.
Yeah.
I don't think we should have picked this game up. I think I get the concept. You're both there. You can pick up another big out of conference games. Although we saw last year, Big 12 didn't do it. Big 12 got a lot of teams in by just playing themselves. You play cupcakes all non-conference. You play one or two big conference opponents. And what do? You end up with, you know, eight teams in the tournament. So, listen, the Big East has not looked great this non-conference so far. We have to do well in this Big 12 matchup across the board, all Big East teams, not just St. John's against Kansas State. We've got to do well here to bounce back coming towards the end of non-conference, because we play hard schedules. And I just think this may have been a bit of a scheduling snafu for us.
Yeah, I think especially, I said it earlier in the double overtime game, they looked like they didn't have legs. They looked like they had no legs at all whatsoever from the start of this game. You could just tell that, you know, the double overtime game, then another game, now they're playing a third game in 4 days. They were gassed.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, it was not the trip we wanted. We were hoping to go at least 2-1. We went 1-2.
Yeah, it's funny. I do want to say that if we leave the Bahamas, only having lost to Baylor and beating Virginia, we're still ranked. Everybody's kosher with everything. You know, no
absolutely
problem.
Absolutely.
But because we lost to Georgia by three, which, by the way, Georgia has got three more votes than we did. We got, I think, 7 votes. They got 10 votes, I was looking at. So they're in the mix now getting ranked. So they're not a bad team.
The SEC is great. They're off to a great start, and Georgia is off to a great start as well. But you're 100% right, Nick. We lose the double overtime game to Baylor, as crushing as it is. We then go on, beat Virginia and beat Georgia. We probably go up in the rankings, to be completely honest. We at minimum stay at 22.
Yeah, I agree.
And go from there. So it really was the Georgia loss, in my opinion, that stung more than the Baylor loss, because that's one that kind of hurt the resume at the current moment more than the Baylor loss. Yeah, no one's faulting you for a double overtime loss against Baylor.
Right. Just a missed opportunity more than anything.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I hope at least you had fun in the Bahamas, Nick.
Yeah, yeah. I had a lot of fun. So I actually got to go down to the Bahamas. I went with my my parents, my fiance, and then my cousins go down to actually Bahamar. That's like they call it their Disney. So they're like regulars there, which is kind of crazy. They were talking to the bartenders like by first name basis. But it was a really... It was awesome being down there. It's not as a manager. There was like
much less work for you this trip.
A ton less work and a lot more beach time. So St. John's, when we were down there, had the biggest like contingency. We were told they had about like 500 to 600 people, and everybody else only had like max. I think like Baylor or Tennessee was the next highest up with like 100 or something like that. Wow. And like basically, you were walking around, people were wearing their St. John's stuff. Every time somebody saw something, they're like, yeah, let's go Johnny, you know what I mean? Just whatever. And like in the arena, it got loud for us. Like it felt like a home game for us, which was it was amazing. And it was really cool, just like, you know, we got to see the same people, right? Like I was sitting in the same spot I sat in the two games, and this, you know, this bunch of guys ahead of us were just like, you know, we were just cheering and talking the whole time. And then later on we see him at like, you know, we're waiting at the sports book, and then they come over. It was just cool because you see the same people, and then it's like, you guys know you're St. John's. We were talking to them even in the airport and this and that.
That is the nice part of those tournaments, is you can get in a groove with other fans, right? I mean, you get to meet more people, and you get to kind of, you know, have a fun time with people you don't know.
and those are the big fans, right? I mean, you're not going to the Bahamas to watch St. John's play unless you're really invested, right? And that's why it was so loud. Those are the people that cheer.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, benefit of geography, right? I mean, the Bahamas is a 2-hour flight from here, from New York.
Yeah,
much closer than Baylor and Tennessee and Virginia. Oh, Virginia actually probably closer. To be completely honest,
well, Tennessee's Virginia's not very good.
Virginia's not very good. Yeah, Tennessee,
more inland.
Yeah, 50-50. Could be as close.
It's about the direction of the flight.
I would put money there's no direct flight from Knoxville to the Bahamas. Anyway.
Another fun part about being in the Bahamas is, you know, you go down, you start gambling, and sometimes you start playing craps with Kadar Richmond's brother.
There you go.
I play with him for like a couple hours.
There you go.
That's a good time.
You win money?
Yeah, did you win some money or no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we both won. We were both winning.
There you go.
Nice. I'd like to see that.
Otherwise, not so much fun.
Good all around. Nice to see you shot well in the craps table. Better than we shot in that Georgia game, for sure. One other thing we do have to talk about in the Georgia game, and an unfortunate moment with Davion Smith not reacting too well about being benched by Rick Pitino. Obviously, there was a bit of a back and forth. He then remained benched for the rest of the game. This is an issue that's actually still up in the air. Whether he'll play against Kansas State or not is up to the team. Rick Pitino's left it up to the team when he'll return. And we'll see. We'll see if he returns this Saturday against Kansas State or not. You know, I would tend to think sitting out the entire Harvard game, you know, obviously there's a week in between. I would believe he's probably going to play, maybe not start, but, you know, yeah. I think we certainly see him in the game.
Hopefully he gets back. I mean, look, he's also a key part to this team, but I understand we have standards and you have to abide by those standards. So, hopefully we see him back on the court and he contributes for us.
I will say this. It's a nice breath of fresh air of coaching, seeing Rick Pitino pull a guy for being super upset rather than just like letting him do whatever he wants, like our past coaches have.
Well, there's a reason he's a Hall of Fame coach, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
he has the ability to do that.
So. He's good at it. He does. He gets more breath because of it, right? I mean, he gets more ability to do stuff like that without an AD coming down on him or without the school coming down on him because he's Rick Pitino. As he should. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it.
No, it's better. It's certainly better. It's just not a lot of coaches has that ability to just do that.
Not for sure. Well, the game we didn't play in was against Harvard, which rough year for Harvard so far, and we made it a little more rough for them. 77-64 victory. Another game where we looked good. We were in control. Would have liked to have won by a bit more points, to be completely honest. There was never a point where we looked out of shape, I should say. 44% from the field. 22% from three is not good.
No.
It's not 10%, but it's only 12% more. And 69% from the free throw line is a fairly decent day. But no, it was good closer, because we won.
We could have.
Yes, closer than we would like it to be.
Yeah, certainly closer than we would have liked. We looked like we didn't really want to win this game at certain points. Like, if it wasn't for our offensive rebounding and getting so many opportunities, I'm not sure if we would have won this game. And their poor shooting.
Yeah. I mean, we did look. Every time they did get close, though, we did answer and respond.
We did.
To the shot.
We did.
They pushed it a bunch of times. I'm not saying they didn't. But then they would push, and then we would extend. And then they push us back. I mean, we couldn't put them away, which is a problem in and of itself. But in terms of, I think the closest guy was four at one point in the second half, which is too close against Harvard. Look, Harvard's not bad. The Ivies generally are okay. They're solid, but
no, they're
the team we need to be.
Harvard's pretty bad this year.
If we're the team we want to be, then we won though.
No, but
at the end of the day, we won. But
but it is concerning to see that we didn't put them away. We do not to focus on the negative, but Aaron Scott had a bad day. 0 points for him. 0 of 2. He only played 13 minutes, which I thought was a bit odd. Brady Dunlap got a ton of minutes though. He played 24, didn't make much with it though. Only 2 points. But we did see Jaden Glover do a little bit of a step out. 11 points for him. 4 of 10. Yeah. That was nice. 3 of 8 from the three. You know, that some bright spots there. I think our inability to put them away is kind of the main note from this game, and a little bit concerning as we obviously head towards a bigger matchup against Kansas State. And then, you know, we're very close to Big East play, as strange as that is, considering it's December 4th. You know, 2 weeks, we're going to be playing in Big East play. So,
yeah. And the three-point shooting continues to be a concern.
Absolutely.
I mean, look, when we shot really well against Baylor and Virginia, we looked great, looked like world beaters. When we don't, when we shoot bad, you know, we let Georgia hang around, a team we probably should have beat.
Right, we let Harvard hang around, a team we certainly should beat.
Certainly should be. You know what I mean? The 3-point shooting. And look, going into the season, we knew this was going to be a potential issue. And, you know, when games, we don't hammer down the nail because we just don't hit enough threes. So when we hit threes, we win big. If we don't, it could be, you know, a little deep breath for everybody because it could be close.
It's also concerning that we shot poorly from the three when we're at Carnesecca Arena, which is our home, which we should be practicing at as much as possible leading up to it when we have a week break. You know what I mean? It's not like we're playing at MSG where we're getting one shooter.
Right. Well, I think that leads to a bit of a bigger concern in that it's not necessarily. So when you shoot bad in the random Atlantis gym you've never played in, you go, okay,
right.
You chalk that up as being a whatever. Like you said, when you're shooting bad in multiple games, including games at home, all of a sudden now it becomes a bigger issue and a bigger concern. But we'll see. I mean, listen, the reason you play these non-conference early games is to get kinks like this out. So let's hope that the three-point shooting, you know, figures itself out over the next 2 weeks and we head in the right direction.
Better to work on it in a win than in a loss.
Absolutely. That's the best takeaway you can give, Craig. All right. So now it's time for the Spotlight Player of the Week. We're going to do 2 weeks. Obviously, we're including those tournament games in this conversation. Craig, we will start with you. Who are you going to give your Spotlight Player of the Week to?
I'm going to give my Spotlight Player of the Week to Zubi Ejiofor. I think, as you said, notwithstanding the two missed free throws, he had a great game against Baylor. He followed it up with some massive resilience to play a Gary again against Virginia and against Georgia. He had a great game. So I'm going to give him my Spotlight Player of the Game.
All right.
Of the week.
I think that's fair. Nick, what about you?
My Spotlight Player of the last 2 weeks has got to be RJ Lewis. He scored in double digits in all four of the games in the past 2 weeks. He was the spark plug we needed in a lot of the games when we were down in Harvard. He had more energy than a lot of the other guys we should have needed in one of the games. He was a very energizing force whenever he came in. I wish sometimes he would look up when he has the ball rather than just putting his head down and deciding to go to the basket. But I feel like in the last 2 weeks he's made enough of him that I can make him my Spotlight Player of the Week.
No, fair enough. I agree on the heads up thing. I'm going to go Zubi Ejiofor as well. Two 22-point games. He also had, you know, 8 and 9 against Virginia and 8 and 8 against Harvard. He also had 3 steals against Georgia, which I thought was a nice, funny stat for him. But no, just a great, you know, he's really coming into his role well. And I think these past 2 weeks he's grown a lot, and he's seen not only that he doesn't have to be the 22-point guy to help the team be successful. And I think that, you know, as he grows more into this role, the more he makes it his own by playing within himself, we're going to end up with, you know, more moments where Zubi's our guy. So Zubi Ejiofor, Spotlight Player of the Week. Congratulations to him. Honorable mention, though, as we've added another team captain, Sadiku Ibinayo is now our third captain. He joins Zubi and Kadari as our 3 team captains. So congratulations to him. Not the Spotlight Player of the Week, but a team captain. So well-deserved. All right. Now let's move ahead to look at the matchups for this week and actually for next week as well. First, we'll start with the home game at 11:30. I know that's strange, on Saturday, December 7th, against the Kansas State Wildcats. That game is on Fox at Carneseca Arena. Why it's at 11:30? Great question. No one knows.
You know, for college football. No, because it's not.
Fox doesn't have any games.
Yeah.
I have no idea. No clue. Very, very interesting question as to why the heck this game is at 11:30. But hey, I guess,
you know, TV. That's why.
If there was football, like okay, fair. But there's not, so I don't know what the heck Fox is doing. It's got to be something. But anyway,
it's something. I don't. They had. There's a plan. We don't know the plan, but there's a plan.
It's a plan they're not sharing with everybody. All right. So Kansas State, obviously part of the Big East, Big 12 battle. K-State. Good matchup for us, I think, in terms of the Big 12. We've had some up and some down, right? We played Nebraska. We played Kansas. We played, you know, bounce back and forth. I think Kansas State is a good team. You know, it'll be a good matchup for us. I also think it's a game we can win. They've had, 6-2, haven't really had many good matchups. They lost to LSU. That was the only Power 6 team that they've played. Their other loss came to Liberty. Besides that, they haven't really played anybody, so they're a bit of an unknown, I would say, but they're heading into a tough stretch, to be honest. They play at us against St. John's, then they play Drake, who's sneaking into the rankings with some votes. They're not ranked, but they've got some votes. Then they play at Wichita State and then versus Cincinnati, who actually just lost, by the way, to the Villanova Wildcats. Speaking of Wildcats.
Good win. Good start for the Big East, Big 12 battle for the Big East.
Very good. We also got a win from Providence against BYU, so that's off to a good start.
Very important week for the Big East, as we said before.
Yeah, we talked about it before. This Big 12 matchup is very, very important for us. We need to do well here, and we can help do that by winning against Kansas State. Kansas State, like I said, bit of an unknown, but they got kind of a two-headed monster, if you will. The Wildcats are led by David Gesson, 14 points a game, 6 rebounds, shoots 71% from the field, which is pretty impressive considering he's a guard.
That is pretty impressive.
Also shoots 66% from 3. So, wow. Listen, the man's a menace.
My lord.
He's going to be a problem. Fortunately for us, they're kind of a two-headed monster, if you will. Brendan Housen is the next guy. He averages 13 points a game, pretty good. But obviously, Gesson is the guy you got to handle. You handle Gesson and everything else, you know, kind of falls into place. They've only got one other guy who averages double digits in Doug McDaniel.
Wait, on this Michigan team that we played last year.
Yeah, very, very true. Very true. I mean, he averages almost 6 assists a game. So he's their point guard and he'll lead it well. You know, he'll be dishing the ball, but mainly dishing it to Gesson. As long as we can stop him. You know, the more shots Gesson misses, the better we are. So my game plan would be just double team him and figure out the rest.
Would you say that you're Gesson, he's got to be the guy we've got to watch out
for? Nick, not even a dad. Great dad joke. What a way to go, kid. They're 94th in the net, which just came out for the first time this year.
Not great.
Not great. No. I mean, better than Seton Hall. Seton Hall's 200.
I mean, that's really not great. It's really bad for the Big East. We need them to pick that shit up.
Yeah, but I don't know that they will. They're pretty bad. Anyway, we're coming at 42nd.
42.
On the net rankings, so pretty good to start. Obviously, we'd like to see that number improve, but we'll certainly take it. Yeah, I think this is a game where... You know, I think it's similar to Georgia. I think they're a team that, you know, could play well against us. But it's on paper, it's a matchup that if we're going to be the team we think we are, it's a win. So
I want to make the tournament. We have to win this game. This is not a game. We don't have any more room for error. We cannot. We have to win this game. We have to beat Kansas State. You just have to do it.
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Davion Smith. If he plays, how that impacts the team. How that impacts the game. But yes, I agree. This is a must-win game, and I think we got to do everything we can to make sure that we win this game. So I would be in favor of Davion Smith playing. But eventually we got to stop making excuses, right? So
maybe just win.
We can blow up the Georgia game, but you can't lose to Georgia and Kansas State.
No.
Nope. Nick, would you say this is a must-win game?
I think if we want to be ranked going into Big East play, it's a must-win game.
But do you think we'll be ranked if we win this game?
No, I don't. But I think if we win this game, then we go on to beat Bryant. Then, well, I guess
that would be Big East play. Then
I take that back because I didn't know that happened that quickly.
Big East play is coming very quickly.
Very quickly. Well, it's like the little, you know. Two games.
I'll back Nick up though. Listen, I mean, we're receiving votes to be ranked, right? Win against Kansas State, although I don't know if that's enough to get us over the hump.
I don't think it is.
It's certainly going to get us. We got 7 votes this week. It's certainly going to get us more votes than that.
Listen, here's what I will say. If we beat Kansas State, we beat Bryant, then we go on and beat DePaul and Providence. Now I know it's our conference. Then we beat Delaware to finish off our non-con on December 28th, although we still have the game before the new year because we play Creighton on the 31st. But if we play all those games and win all those games, I think it's very likely that we're ranked going into that Creighton game if they do that. I don't know what day.
I would say we're certainly ranked by that point. I think, Nick, if we beat Kansas State and we beat Bryant and we beat DePaul, I think we're ranked. You want to know why? Because the DePaul Blue Demons got 3 votes to be ranked this week.
Wow.
DePaul. You know why, right?
Look at them.
Because they're undefeated.
Man. They're one of the few undefeated teams remaining.
DePaul, our sister school, Vincent.
Can you imagine?
Oh, God.
Our sister
Nick, school. Nick always with the sister school.
Always with the sister
school. We got schools. 2 of them.
Here's a good nugget. DePaul, largest Catholic school in the country.
Wow. Putting us to shame. Putting the rest of us Big Easters to shame.
That just means they got more people. Anyway. Good to see them getting votes, though. They are obviously a place where they have had rough times. for very, very long times. So I was happy to see them get some votes this week. I really was. I think it's, you know,
it's good for them.
It's well deserved. Listen, they got a good coach now, right? Holtzman's a good coach. He's proved he can do it. And they've been searching for the right coach for a while. He may be the answer. You know, he just certainly
hopefully just not too good.
Yeah, right. Good enough to get mediocre enough that we can get a nice win against them and have it count for something.
I'll take two.
But Holtzman has won in the Midwest, so I think he's a guy who
if they could not be sub 300 in the net, that'd be nice for our conference.
Well, now we got now we got Seton Hall dragging us down.
Right.
They're too. By the way, don't look now. The Georgetown Hoyas 7-1 on the season so far. They had their one loss against Notre Dame. And then they went on a stretch afterwards. They haven't really played many people. They do get West Virginia in the Big 12 battle. As much as I'm not an Ed Cooley fan, seeing them beat West Virginia and then seeing them beat Syracuse would be fun. Mainly just because I hate Syracuse and we need the win for the Big East.
No other
real reason to root for Georgia.
Yes, in that game I'm just rooting that nobody wins, frankly. Those are my two most hated teams.
Yeah, but I think I'm rooting for Big East interest.
There are games where
you have to root for Big East interest, and I think that's the perfect example of a game where my only rooting interest is the Big East positivity. So, Georgetown, not because of, you know, because of the overarching umbrella, not because of them.
You're rooting for St. John's through the vehicle of Georgetown.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In the West Virginia game as well. Those are the only reasons to ever root for Georgetown. But anyway, now that we've talked about the bottom of the Big East, let's continue to talk about our great top of the Big East, Red Storm. Kansas State, you know, is it going to be a tough one? Another game where you walk in and say, yeah, you know, this may be a must-win game. Speaking of a game that is a must-win game, the other game we have rapidly approaching is on Wednesday, December 11th. The St. John's Red Storm will be taking on Bryant at Carnesecca Arena at 7 p.m., that game on CBS Sports Network. It's the return of Rafael Pinzon. Pinzon transferred, obviously, as we know. He transferred to Bryant, where he'll be returning. Bryant off to a 5-4 start. Not a great team. They got losses to Siena, St. Bonaventure, Stonehill, and Chattanooga. But Pinzon is their leading scorer, 19 points a game, 43% from the field, 56% from three. You know, it's always interesting when guys come back, in my opinion, to see how they react. I mean, is there anybody on the team that played with Pinzon? I don't think there is.
I don't think so. No.
Nobody from the Mike is done.
There's nobody left. That's actually very interesting. Nobody left who played with Pinzon on this team. So it won't be as much of a reunion for him and the team, but for him and the school, I guess.
But he knows those rooms real well.
Well, that is true. That is true. So, he's a guy you could see light up Carnesecca. Earl Timberlake is their other guy, 14 points a game, almost 8 rebounds a game. So he'll be, someone we'll have to keep an eye on. He also averages almost 5 assists per game. So I think they're their two best players. They got another big man, Barry Evans, who averages 12 points a game. So someone to keep an eye on down low that Zuby will have to play with. But
he shoots like 42% from the three. That guy.
Wow.
Barry Evans.
He does. That's wild. So, yeah, listen, I mean, I know we keep saying, you know, this is a game we should win. But, you know, listen, the reason you play the non-conference games is not so that way you always have a hassle or always have a tough game. The K-State game is a real game. The Bryant game is not. The Bryant game is a game where, again, you're gonna feel guys out. You're going to get to see different lineups, probably. You're going to get to see, who can play at what position for what level. So,
yeah. I mean, I think the Bryant game is about it building that chemistry and, like you said, finding your roles and getting fine-tuned for when the Big East play starts later the next week.
Exactly. It is a quick turnaround, and all of a sudden, it's Big East play. The early December Big East play is kind of weird. I kind of liked when we started on New Year's. I felt like that was a better vibe. Everybody starting at the same time. Then all of a sudden, we started playing them like randomly. We started playing DePaul. I think it's the team we played the one time. We played them like December 7th or something like that.
Something
even
weird.
Earlier, and then we had to play them again. But yeah, no. Big East play right around the corner, even though we still have Delaware, like Nick talked about, after a few Big East matchups. So, all right, so make sure to get out. I know it's 11:30 in the morning on a Saturday in December. It's going to be cold. But go out. Make sure we get a big crowd for this K-State game because it is an important one. I actually view it as a must-win if we want to be a team that's a real contender. Joe Lunardi, by the way, first bracketology out way too early in my opinion, but St. John's is sixth seed. If we ever want to live up to that, we got to win this K-State game. Good start for us, by the way. I don't know if there's ever been a season in the past probably 10 years where we started off as a sixth seed in the bracketology.
I was going to say, if we finish as a sixth seed in the tournament, that'd be the highest seed probably in my life that I can remember in my lifetime.
No, we were six when we had DJ Kennedy get hurt.
Correct.
We would have been higher.
We should have been higher.
Should have been higher. But the committee screwed us once again. So hopefully we are above a six, but we've got a lot more season to go. Anyway. Get out Saturday, root hard against the Wildcats. Hopefully we come away with a nice victory. For Craig and Nick, I'm Vincent. Go Johnnies. Keep chasing.